From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Of the 27,000 firefighters on the wildfire lines in the western United States, about half are fighting fires in California. And the biggest fires in this state aren't yet at 50% containment, but they're getting closer. And usually at this time, we're connecting by phone to CAL FIRE's Deputy Director of Communications, Chief Mike Moeller. I'm happy to say he's actually in the studio with us today, Chief. Thanks again for your ongoing work and glad to have you with us.
No, Beth, thank you for having us.
We are also fortunate to have the director of CAL FIRE, Chief Ken Pimlott, in the studio as well. And Chief, I don't know how you made the time, but I'm really grateful you did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could I start with that idea of 50% containment? Containment's been increasing. We're not there at 50%, but is it appropriate for us at this point to have some sense of security or confidence about where the fires are going?
I think we can start to feel better about where these fires are going as these containment numbers come up. But for example, the Carr Fire and certainly the Mendocino Complex, these are very large fires, and the amount of perimeter is miles and miles. And so it will take some time to get control lines, either bulldozer, hand crew lines around all of that. But particularly on the Carr Fire, the spread has been slowed, and we've been able to repopulate communities. The threat to Redding and some of those areas there on the west or east side of the fire are certainly lowered. But, we're certainly not out of the woods yet. We want to see 100% containment on all these fires.
Chief Moeller, let's do some of the daily update that we've been doing each day. And the director just mentioned the Carr Fire, so let's begin there.
So on the Carr Fire right now, like the chief was saying, we're about 35% containment. Over 125,000 acres. The only thing that we see on that, like the chief said, we're cautiously optimistic. We still have a lot of open fire line, but we're expecting a red flag warning in that area this weekend. So again, cautiously optimistic, but firefighters are making good progress.
The Ferguson Fire to the south, and that one I understand is now pushing closer to the perimeter, and Wawona is being fully evacuated.
It is. And again, when we look at evacuation warnings, your listeners have to remember it's, there's a reason it's not right on top of the community. But it's always when we have open fire line in those areas, it's a threat. So if you're in that area asked to evacuate, please do so. But again, a lot of resources on that fire and crews continue to make progress. But again, Mother Nature plays a big part in that.
And we already had the announcement that Yosemite Valley will stay closed at least through Sunday. That's air quality, smoky quality. That's just intense and bad for everybody in the area.
It really is. And we work with our partners at the National Park Service. I mean, our goal is to get the park open, get visitors in there. But right now, being in the park, it really is. It's socked in smoke and the air quality and really just the safety of the public is still a concern for us.
The Mendocino Complex, and I think one of the fires in the Mendocino Complex is at 50% containment, but that's been massive. And as we talked about yesterday, could end up overtaking the Carr Fire in acreage before it's fully out.
It really is. And in fact, the chief and I were just talking about this. You know, we're seeing these larger fires are common now, over 100,000 acres. That wasn't normal. We're seeing that. But if these fires continue to grow, we could see these past the Carr Fire well over 100,000 acres. Yes, we have 50% containment. But again, that's a lot of open fire line, like the chief alluded to. That's miles of line that crews have to get to and contain that fire.
I'll emphasize that with the weather this weekend, there is a forecast for, again, temperatures 90 to 100 degrees in the valley. Red flag warnings will be across western Nevada, and we have both the air quality and the fire danger alerts. That new normal that we're being asked to take the word new out of, so the phrase being normal. Normal, then, Director Pimlott, is quite shocking.
Normal is shocking, and almost every year we move into a different pace. This year is really outpacing last year, and we've seen some very extreme fire behavior. The Carr Fire had what can only be described as a tornado.
It probably felt like a volcano.
It certainly did for the people there on
the
fire.
People living there. Yeah.
It did, but this is extreme weather, and it's influencing the fire. It's influencing how we have to evacuate and how we have to very quickly provide advance notice. And all of these are very challenging conditions that firefighters are facing.
Let's listen to a few of the words that Governor Brown spoke yesterday at the Emergency Operations Center, because climate change, of course, is his platform. But to put that in the context of fires, he had some very personal words to say.
We're in uncharted territory. Since civilization emerged 10,000 years ago, we haven't had this kind of heat condition, and it's going to continue getting worse. I mean, that's the way it is.
So if that's the way it is, as the governor just said, how do you sufficiently expand and prepare your agencies in advance for a disaster season that is hard to predict?
So obviously, we have to be prepared for the long haul. And so as we're always planning ahead of the next fire. You know, we're planning days and weeks out right now. How are we going to get firefighters rested? How are we bringing additional resources into the state for in preparation for the next large fire? As the governor said yesterday, we will have more fires this year. These peak fires are early for this time of year. So we have a long road. The kinds of things we're doing is bringing on additional aircraft. This governor and this legislature have been very forward-thinking in terms of providing the resources necessary. Cal Fire now has the ability to staff fire engines year-round in strategic areas around the state. We have been bringing on additional aircraft. We've actually got agreements now with a number of additional aircraft through the rest of the year. Including
Coast Guard aircraft, too.
Yes, we're currently, and again, it depends. We're waiting for Congress for a final approval, but we're working through a process to have some additional aircraft appropriated to Cal Fire from the federal government. And those are some mid and longer term processes that will help us build capacity. We're also looking at, just this year, hiring additional firefighters to help provide some more capacity and relief. So all of these are things we're thinking forward. But as we talked about yesterday with the governor, we continue to look forward to determine how we're going to continue to address this increasing challenge.
Knowing you were coming in today, I was thinking about the conversation we had toward the end of last year's fire season. So this is December, and I went back and listened to it. I'm pulling out a clip that we can all hear because we were again referencing that phrase, new normal. And so let's just listen.
And so it's how do we sustain this level year-round? And that's what we all are having to look at. And it's taxing and it's involving everyone. It's not just Cal Fire. It's our almost 1,000 local government fire departments across the state. It's our federal partners. It's law enforcement. It's local counties and communities who are having to work through this.
Was there ever such a network of cooperation and communication between agencies before in wildfire fighting?
I think California has always led the way because we've always been challenged, but we have taken it to an absolute new level. The cooperation, the integration between all agencies, between non-governmental organizations, it's seamless. And we spent the day with the Red Cross and others in Shasta County yesterday. And it's just amazing to see how this entire network and system comes together.
So if that was December, you were preparing the budget that just kicked into place for our new fiscal year in July. What did you already know that you were going to need to do differently for this year? And we've had three big fires already. And I know that your vision is out ahead for next year. And what do you already know that still needs to change for next year?
So several things. Some key things is our helicopter replacement program. The governor and the legislature have approved replacing all 12 of our UH-1 Huey helicopters with S-70i Blackhawks. And so we're in the process of purchasing the first ones as we speak. So again, these are new platforms. They will be better situated to address the kinds of challenges we're facing. So that very key investment that the state's making.
I'd like to hear from both of you in terms of alerting the public, because you can have all the best equipment in the world, but if people aren't out of their homes in time, we're still left with the same loss of life and destruction. And I know there are different pieces of the alert system. There's satellite sensing of smoke. There are texting phone systems that are set up and have been affected. But talk to me about the car fire in particular and what did or didn't work with alerting the public. Director Pimlott?
So obviously evacuations were in progress. There was an evacuation. There were trigger points established. Just like any fire, trying to determine, you know, how far out you go with evacuations. We'll be evaluating once this fire is done and things are controlled and we start getting the community repopulated as to what were those time frames. This tornado that literally ripped through the west portion of Reading. There was no way to predict that. There was no warning. And so to provide advance notice to the community was challenging. But these are lessons learned. We have experts from as far away as Kansas that are tornado experts. They're literally looking at it right now with many others because we want to be able to better predict and determine these unusual events that are now occurring.
And Chief Moeller, you must be hearing this on the ground from reporters and from citizens in these communities that there were in some cases no alerts, or there were drive to the door warnings but no time to get out.
No, absolutely. And unfortunately, if we look back at the Santa Rosa and North Bay fires, that really put notification on the map. But what we have to look at is when the chief and we talk about it is not new normal, it's the normal. We have to lean forward with the public and educate them that, you know, infrastructure failed in those areas within the first hour of the fire. When we issue a fire weather watch or a red flag warning here in anywhere in the state of California, people have to realize that they should treat that like it was a tornado warning or a hurricane warning on the East Coast.
That should be the first step in thinking about evacuation.
Absolutely. And can't rely on infrastructure, because when we have these mega fires or devastating wildfires where we're seeing these weather phenomenons, infrastructure fails. We say it all the time in the fire service is situational awareness and have your head on a swivel. And we need the public to do that, because this is not going to change. It's not going to go away. And unfortunately, Santa Rosa, you think about it, that jumped a 6-lane freeway. It burnt down really an urban community. It's not if you're going to be affected, it's when. So yes, the alerting systems, sign up for everyone you can. But again, you have to remember that when we issue those warnings or the weather service, it's going to happen, and we need the public to be ahead of that.
Was the warning to the public in the Reading area for the car fire effective?
I certainly think many, many people were evacuated. We were on the phone as this was evolving with all of our on-scene command staff who were all out actively engaged in assisting in the evacuations. And the highway patrol, local law enforcement, all quickly engaged to reverse direction on the highways and the roads. And yes, there was certainly congestion, but quickly they organized that evacuation effort and safely evacuated everyone. There were no fatalities involved in the evacuation. They were very, quickly moved out. And again, of a fire that moved this quickly, it was an amazing job getting all of those people out without more people being injured or killed.
And yet there are 6 fatalities on that fire. There are 2 fatalities on the Ferguson. I don't think there have been any fatalities in the Mendocino Complex fire.
There have not, no.
So lessons learned about that. What can be better or different next time?
So 2 of the fatalities on the Ferguson fire are firefighters. The others are civilians. 2 of the fatalities on the car fire were individuals who were firefighters fighting the fire. And then the tragedy of the individuals that lost their civilians who lost their lives there in Reading when the fire just burned through that neighborhood so quickly. Lessons learned, this is a dangerous job for firefighters, and we will risk lives to save lives. And we're very concerned about all of our people out there. We're at the beginning of August. This is a long road to hoe to get through the rest of the summer, and our people are going to get tired. And so it's our responsibility to make sure we're taking care of them. But we can't stop our commitment to protecting the public and the resources of the state. And it's a difficult, dangerous job. We need the public to engage and help us do their part. We want to put fewer firefighters in harm's way and law enforcement officers having to stop firefighting and evacuate people from their homes. We want them to find the right places to stop these fires and do that.
Chief Moeller, just a point of context for information. Sometimes the acreage we list in acreage burned includes acreage that was burned in a preventative sort of way, in setting an advance fire as a containment line. So how should we interpret, if we're going to get wiser about reporting and conveying information about fires, how do we interpret that phrase, acres burned?
Well, when we say acres burned, especially on an actually active incident, acreage burned may be, depending on what the operations section chief on the ground determines is the best case for fighting the fire. A lot of times we put fire on the ground to fight fire. It's very effective. There's a what we call a go, no-go checklist that we go through. It's a very planned out operation. But when we say acres burn, that includes what we put on the ground to fight the fire, where we actually run the fire into itself. So when we show that to the public, when we show acres burn, that increase can also be part of the operation that we actually put on the ground.
That's very different than a prescribed fire that's done in a different time of year under a prescription, not under a wildland fire environment. We do keep track of, you know, we want to do much more of prescribed fire, but that's burning under a prescription that's in a weather window that we can control, that's lower intensity and actually has significant resource benefit and fuels reduction benefit.
Is it advancing our reporting again to, for example, say overnight the Mendocino complex had a flare up and it burned X amount of acres, but we as CAL FIRE burned X amount of acres in containment? Does it help the public to know that information?
It can, but again, when we have an active moving incident, you know, we report acreage. So what they do is really fly the fire line and map it out. So we're going off of the actual line. When we say acres increase, that could be an interior island that burned off that same night and burned interior acres. Yeah, I mean, it's something that the public can know, but when we're doing it as an operational in an incident, for us to separate that, it's just it would be more difficult to explain to the public where it was on the fire, why we did it. And sometimes when it's in the operation, it's needed immediately where we put fire on the ground. They're just going to map the perimeter. So when we say acres burn, that's including everything that we do on that incident.
That is CAL FIRE's Deputy Director of Communications, Mike Moeller. Also in the studio with me is CAL FIRE's Director, Ken Pimlott. Let's talk about forest management a little bit. And we hear the unbelievable number of standing dead trees due to the bark beetle infestation and the impact of the drought. So what about forest management? How can that be a more effective tool in dealing with the mega fires?
So Governor Brown's been talking about the impacts of climate on all sectors in the state, but certainly forest management and our forests being a significant one. And as a result, the 129 million trees succumbing to this epidemic level of insect outbreak, and certainly these fires that are occurring. We had a tree mortality task force that started several years ago to look at just the bark beetle challenge. And now we've expanded that role to have a task force that's addressing all of the issues surrounding the health of our forest. Idea being to bring all stakeholders together at all levels of government and non-government organizations and significantly increase the pace and scale of work we're getting done on the ground. We're currently treating over 250,000 acres through all kinds of fuels treatments and removing and thinning trees and prescribed fire. We want to increase the pace and scale of that significantly, and the governor has significantly supported through cap and trade funds. In the last several years, we've gone from $160 million 2 years ago to over $200 million this year. And now in the current budget going forward, we have another $160 million in cap and trade funding, all earmarked towards engaging in landscape level forest health projects, as well as fire prevention and fuels treatment projects on the ground.
Will you forgive me for this, but I want to understand why the fact that you're treating approximately 250,000 acres is a big number when we have two fires that in the last week have consumed 250,000 acres, and we know how much more of the state there is.
Yes, there's literally 31 million acres of wildland, watershed lands that just CAL FIRE protects. On top of that are, of course, all of the federal lands in the state. We have to be strategic. It's not physically possible to treat all of that acreage. It's just not possible. So we're certainly increasing the pace and scale across the state, but we're doing it in strategic places, in landscapes where we can make the most difference, where there's strategic locations where we can reduce the intensity of these fires, where we can provide opportunities for firefighters to have a fighting chance, where the intensity is lower and they can actually do fire suppression operations.
Okay. Finally, I do want to address the budget numbers. And the growth of the budget in just the last 3-4 years has been phenomenal. When you compare what the budget is for firefighting in hundreds of millions versus the billions of dollars in damage that are happening, are we still vastly underfunded by your estimation, Director Pimlott?
This whole effort, and it's not just the response, it's all of the efforts around the impacts of climate change in the state are all things that we have to continue to invest in. to think that just a few years ago, we would invest $220 million from cap and trade funds just in forest health and fire prevention was unheard of. We continue to see significant support in getting this done. But yes, we're going to have a strong commitment, not just by government, by private sector folks, by partnerships, federal government, all of us together working to solve this challenge. And again, it's not just a government solution. It's the community solutions. It's really looking at all the aspects, land use planning, and it's ensuring that hazard mitigation plans are where they need to be. And funding, federal funding, often requires the necessity of having a hazard mitigation plan on file. And so we need to look at our development patterns and work with our local communities. It's all of this together.
Let's hear one more comment from the governor, and this is regarding his asking the legislature to get involved in assessing the responsibility of damages when there are costs from firefighting. And I think everybody knows that this is being confronted at the Capitol, but here was the governor yesterday.
My goal was to try to find a reasonable balance that would reward players, including utilities, for doing the right thing, but make them liable when they didn't take the steps that common sense and prudence would warrant.
And we're in a political transition time when Governor Brown, after so much experience in the state, will no longer be the governor. So is that a sense of concern, too, that politics could dramatically change the direction the state goes in policy?
Well, bottom line is insect mortality, fires, disasters know no political boundaries. And so we have to continue to push forward. There's really a bipartisan effort on forest management, unlike I have ever seen in my career, moving this initiative forward. We have both sides of the aisle realizing that more investment in forest health and forest management, more resources to support the efforts that we're doing, more engagement by local communities in both land use planning and hazard mitigation plans, all of that together. Everyone's in agreement that those are all the areas we need to keep working on. And I'm confident that this will continue to move this across. The stakeholders are so together and motivated to get work done by what we're seeing every day now that's going to transcend any political boundaries.
And just finally, again, because we're coming into a weekend, Chief Moeller, there could be more evacuations. Those fire lines are really volatile at this point. So what's the wisdom to give every listener, to give all of us right now?
Well, we always refer to it. Our website, readyforwildfire.org, and we preach it, and it shouldn't be white noise, that your listeners need to visit that website. Not only does it prepare your home, but it prepares your family for an evacuation, not just for a wildland emergency, for any type of emergency, but we're already off to the races in 2018. This is not going to stop. And as we go into these weather patterns, like I said earlier, the public needs to know that the reason we issue these is because high temperatures, low humidities, possibility of wind, that the public needs to have their situational awareness, head on a swivel, and prepare your family, exercise it. And if you're asked to evacuate, please do so early, safely. That way first responders can get in there and protect your property.
Well, I think we have to have conversations like this because we're all trying to figure out how to respond to what is going to be normal. I appreciate that you've been so attentive and available through all of this. And we're on August 2nd right now. We have August, September, October. Who knows how long this will go? So thank you again very much for your partnership in the communication about what's happening out there. And good luck. Safety to everybody.
Thank you,
Beth.
That is CAL FIRE Director Ken Pimlott and CAL FIRE's Deputy Director of Communications, Mike Moeller. Continuing coverage and links to the CAL FIRE incident page are at capradio.org. This is Insight on Capital Public Radio.